On December 19, 2008, Tim DeChristopher, a student at the University of Utah, participated in a highly disputed Bureau of Land Management auction registered as bidder number 70. Mr. DeChristopher outbid buyers from the oil and gas industry and won a total of 22,000 acres of land worth $1.7 million. But because he had no money or intention to actually pay for the land, Mr. DeChristopher was tried and sentenced to 2 years in federal prison and ordered to pay a $10,000 fine. He argued that he had acted to protect thousands of acres of pristine wilderness. The story is captured in a film called Bitter 70, which opens at the Quad Cinema this Friday. It's produced and directed by George and Beth Gage, and I'm very pleased that it brings them and Tim DeChristopher to our show today. Welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us.
Great pleasure to be on.
Now, Tim, you're originally from West Virginia, a state that's not known for protecting its environment from mountaintop removal, coal mining. Was that where your interest in the environment got started?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I kind of inherited from my parents. When I was growing up in West Virginia, my mom was an activist fighting coal companies in the early days of mountaintop removal. So it's certainly something that I grew up with.
And then in Utah, which is one of the most beautiful states in the Union, were similar things happening, or was this a unique situation?
Yeah, I mean, Utah has had this long history of both extreme love for its beautiful environment and also extreme exploitation and the huge battles that are going on there, you know, from the days of Edward Abbey and the fights that he was involved with.
George and Beth, in previous films, you've also focused on environmental issues like the effects of dams on river systems and in troubled waters or government policies governing the grazing rights of Native peoples and American outrage. What attracted you to Tim's story? How did you hear about it in the first place?
Well, I read about Tim's action in our local Telluride, Colorado newspaper. And we, as you mentioned, had just completed a film called American Outrage, in which the Bureau of Land Management was very much involved with trying to push the Dan sisters off their land. And so one thing that caught my eye was certainly Tim's ingenious action, his courageous admission of what he was doing, but also the fact that his attorney, Patrick Shea, had been the former head of the Bureau of Land Management in D.C.
So, George, the two of you decided to make a film about this?
Yeah, in the beginning I thought that this ingenious act was going to be a short film, and it seemed like, you know, Tim had saved the land, and basically the story was over, this one ingenious act of peaceful civil disobedience. But then I think that once Tim was indicted by the Obama administration, and then once his trial was postponed 9 times over 2.5 years, it was very obvious that this was a full-length feature documentary and a very, very big story, and we felt an important story to be told.
Now, Tim, you were an economics student at the University of Utah. How did you hear about the land auctions that were being conducted by the Bureau of Land Management, BLM?
This particular auction was a unique event. It was the only auction that was held under the new resource management plans that the Bush administration had spent their entire 8 years rewriting.
And this is very much at the end of the Bush administration's time?
Yeah, it's in December of 2008. And so it's pretty much the only auction that happened under those new resource management plans and under the Bush administration. So it got a lot of attention just because of its size and its scale and the relationship to these parcels, to the national parks, and to the city of Moab.
This is very close to Canyonlands and some of the other, a couple of other national parks like Arches, some of the most beautiful land in America.
Right. So there was attention in the media, and it also came up in several of my classes when I was studying economics.
Had any studies been done about the impact of mining and drilling on in this place prior to the auction?
Yeah, there had been. Part of the reason that it was later overturned was that those environmental impact statements and studies were insufficient, that they didn't measure the air quality in the local national parks and that sort of thing. And you know, the primary objection on my part was that they didn't take into account the impacts of climate change, even though they were required by law, under a law that went into effect in 2001, requiring to weigh the impacts of climate change.
Beth, you interviewed some former employees of the BLM, like Dennis Willis, who seemed sympathetic to Tim's cause. But you note that no current employees of the Bureau would agree to be interviewed.
That's true. And
is this government policy?
Well, it seemed to be government policy, although not stated to us. We time after time made calls and emails to different officials, and we were turned down. One time we were actually on our way driving from Colorado to Utah. We had finally gotten an appointment with one of the head person in Utah of the Bureau of Land Management, and about half an hour before we got to his office, that interview was canceled. And when we asked Tim's lawyer why would they continue to do this, obviously they felt very strongly about their position, and he said they just don't see any upside in talking to
you. Have they had any official response to the film?
Not to us so far.
Now, Judge, you mentioned that Tim's attorney, Patrick Shea, who took on the case pro bono, was a former director of the BLM. Under what president?
President Clinton.
And he was shocked by how the bureau that he had run had changed its policies?
Yeah, I think he was very depressed, and I think he was very upset the way they had changed their policies. And I think as he also felt that this, as we did, a very courageous act by Tim, and he threw his services pro bono right out there for Tim to use.
So Tim, take us back to that December day in 2008. What inspired you to enter the auction rather than simply protest outside like many other people were doing?
Well, over the course of 2008, I was becoming more and more committed to taking action in response to the climate crisis. I was seeing that what we were doing as a movement wasn't working. And I was also studying social movement history at the time and seeing that every important social movement in U.S. history that's pushed for change from the bottom has had to have civil disobedience as a part of it.
So you were looking back to the 50s and 60s and civil rights actions and the anti-war movement?
Yeah. And so I was building up my commitment to take that kind of action and just kind of looking for an opportunity. And when I heard about this auction, it really seemed like a prime example of the drill now, think later mentality that's driving the climate crisis. And it was also a confluence of both the exploitation of land and the climate crisis, and also a lack of a transparent and democratic process.
Was it a spur-of-the-moment decision to enter the auction, or had you been planning it?
I was going there thinking I might go in there and make a speech or you know, make some kind of disruption. And when I walked in, they said, "Would you like to be a bidder?" And so I said, "Well, yes, I would."
And they didn't check you for credentials or anything?
No, I gave them my real name, my real address, all that. And I said to represent myself, and that was enough to get me in there.
Did you know that what you were planning to do was illegal?
Yeah. I figured I would probably go to prison. But I figured it was worth it. And at the time, you know, I figured it was worth it just based on the direct impacts of keeping that oil in the ground. And, you know, in retrospect, prison turned out to be pretty tolerable, and the impacts turned out to be much, much bigger than I expected.
Can you describe the bidding process? How are these auctions conducted?
You know, it's kind of a typical auction where they just name the parcel. You know, it's an auctioneer up there talking really fast, and people just lift up their bid cards.
At what point in the auction did the BLM realize that you had no intention to pay for the land?
Well, I wasn't being very subtle. You know, I had started out just by driving up the prices. And then I decided I had to actually start winning these parcels. So I started winning every single parcel.
You were just going up so high that didn't think that they wanted to pay that much?
Yeah, I would just keep constantly bidding. All it takes is like a little flick of the card to bid on them. And I kept raising my card higher and higher each time. You know, I was trying to make it clear that I was there as an active protest. And by the last few parcels that I was winning, I was just holding my bid card up in the air constantly. I wasn't bringing it down in between bids. So it was pretty clear, I think.
George, a big part of your film is how Tim, following his arrest and prior to his sentencing, became a leader in the in the local environmental movement and founded his own environmental organization.
Yeah, it's a wonderful organization. It's called Peaceful Uprising, and these are really dedicated, inspired people, and they not only work very diligently on Tim's trial and preparing for the trial and so forth, but they were constantly involved in environmental and social justice issues, and some of them traveled to West Virginia with us and protested against mountaintop removal. Some went to Power Shift in Washington, D.C., and then they just kept themselves very, very active, as Tim did, rather than sit around and wait for his trial, which I said before was postponed so many times. Tim and Peaceful Uprising kept very, very active.
And Peaceful Uprising is not really an environmental organization. You know, it was founded with an understanding that the environmental movement isn't rising to the challenge of climate change. And so it's a climate justice organization that really approaches the issue in a different way. And tries to experiment and push new grounds and also make a lot of coalitions with other social justice organizations.
Beth, the trial was postponed 9 times mm-hmm. over a period of 2 years. Why do you think the Obama administration kept delaying his trial? Do you think that they had second thoughts about even pursuing it?
I hope so. I hope they had second thoughts. We certainly were surprised when they invalidated the BLM auction and then yet indicted Tim a couple of months later. So we actually didn't expect him to be indicted. And then it seemed again that Tim garnered a lot of supporters and a lot of attention. And the government prosecuting him and persecuting him wasn't really looked at in a friendly light, and I think they just didn't see how they could win this situation.
Well, during the trial, I'm sure it was pointed out that Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar invalidated the auction.
No.
Nobody brought that up? Your lawyer didn't bring that
up? We weren't allowed to mention that in front of the jury.
What were you eventually charged with?
I was charged with one count of violating the Federal Onshore Oil and Gas Leasing Reform Act, which I was the only person to ever be charged with that. So there was no case history to that law, which allowed the judge then to define it based on my actions and to tell the jury that if they found that I did what I obviously did, that was a violation of the law, regardless of what the text of the law actually said.
Do you think that it was really about making an example out of you?
According to the judge, it was. That's what he said at my sentencing hearing. That's what the prosecution asked for in their sentencing memos. They made it very clear that it was about discouraging other people from standing up to the government when the government was acting unjustly.
And there wasn't a jury.
There was a jury. The jury was just
kept
in the
dark. So the judge could have gone the other way if he had been the sole decider. Or do you feel that the trial was kind of slanted against
you? The judge made sure that the jury heard very little information. Most of my trial happened in the judge's chambers, not in the open courtroom. The judge made sure that we weren't allowed to tell the jury that the auction was later overturned. We couldn't tell the jury about climate change. We couldn't tell the jury that I later raised the money and offered it to the BLM, and they refused to take it. So it was a pretty limited trial as far as what the jury was able to hear.
My guests are Tim DeChristopher, who is the subject of a film by George Gage and Beth Gage, also here. The film is called Bitter 70, and it opens at the Quad Cinema this Friday. Were you surprised that the Obama administration had gone after you for protesting an auction that it was opposed to?
No.
You could be convicted and sentenced to 10 years in prison.
but I stood in the way of powerful people, and the law is an instrument of those in power. So I expected that it would be used against me. You know, that's what lobbyists buy Congress people for, so that they can use the law as a weapon when they need to. So it wasn't really that much of a surprise. I think I just provided another platform to bring more attention to the issue.
How long were you sentenced for?
I was sentenced to 2 years, so I served 21 months out of 24.
And you said it wasn't all that bad. Did they send you to a nice prison as opposed to one of the really scary ones?
Well, I was in 5 different institutions over the course of that 21 months. I was in a county jail. I was in a private prison, then in 2 federal prisons, and then in a private halfway house. And so there was a huge disparity among those different institutions. But the majority of my time I spent in a minimum security federal prison. And, you know, the people that I met there were the same kind of people I've met pretty everywhere else I've been in my life. You know, one of the consequences of mass incarceration is that our prisons are filled with pretty normal people.
But how many of them are involved in environmental issues?
Not very many.
You couldn't talk about these things with some of your fellow inmates.
Oh, no. People were certainly interested in it. You know, not everybody was especially educated about it, but people were extremely interested. And being there as a political prisoner, I got a lot of respect for that. And people had a lot of interest in what they could do to stand up to the government.
How long have you been out?
A little under a month now.
Are you thinking of doing things that might get you sent back to prison?
Not in the immediate future, but, you know, I still think there's a lot that needs to be done to hold our government accountable. And so I'm sure I'll go down that road again in the future.
Beth, have you spoken to anybody else in the Obama administration about the inconsistency of their seeming inconsistency of their position on this?
You know, I haven't spoken to anyone that's really inside the administration. But one of the things that we've found showing the film is time after time people ask us, well, you should get this to Obama. You should get this to his administration, because if he knew what was going on, I'm sure that Tim would get a pardon, or Tim wouldn't be indicted, or Tim wouldn't be convicted or sentenced. And we've explained to them that we're quite sure that the Obama administration is aware of Tim's situation, and it was the Obama Department of Justice that sent him to prison. So we haven't spoken to anyone, but I have a feeling they know what's going on.
We thought we had some ways to get to Secretary of the Interior Salazar, and it just fell through. We did try very hard to get an interview and talk to him. Well, maybe there are other ways. Maybe you should speak to the Associated Press, and then the government will find out what you've been saying, and you'll get through that way, maybe.
Maybe they'll be listening today.
So where do things stand? The land was saved.
Mm-hmm.
They're not drilling.
Right.
But there are other parts of the country where people are fighting similar fights. Important factor here that this is next to some of the most glorious national parkland that we have?
That was part of it, but I was primarily concerned about the threat of climate change. And, you know, the government's subservience to the fossil fuel industry has pretty much continued unabated during the Obama administration. It's all the same policies that were in place in the Bush administration, with vast new expansions of offshore drilling, vast new expansions of coal in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming. You know, so we're continuing on the same trajectory. I think the one difference that we've seen over the past few years is that we now have a strong grassroots climate justice movement, and that's the one thing that I find a lot of encouragement in.
George, more films along these lines?
I think so. I mean, we get hit by a subject. In other words, a subject really interests us, and then we make a decision that we're going to do it, and then we throw ourselves wholeheartedly into that story for the next 3 or 4 years.
And this film is the winner of the Best American Film from the Traverse City Film Festival of last year, and won a number of other film festival awards.
Yeah, it's won 20 awards right now. And the thing about the Traverse City Film Festival Award is Best American Film that makes us feel so good is that's Michael Moore's festival. And Michael was very, very involved in the festival, and I think he's a big defender of Tim's actions and Tim personally.
Tim DeChristopher, Beth, and George Gage will be taking questions after the 7 p.m. screening at the Quad this Friday and Saturday. And then Beth and George Gage will be answering questions after the 7 o'clock screening on Monday the 20th as well. The film Bitter 70 at the Quad opening this Friday. My great thanks to the three of you for being on our show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thanks.